Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about violence against African immigrants in South Africa. And tonight I'll be joined momentarily by my colleague Blessing Zulu from VOA's Zimbabwe service. We also have Tammy Ngwenya. He's the provincial head of communications, KwaZulu-Natal. He joins us by phone from Durban. Good evening, Mr. Ngwenya. Hello, Mr. Ngwenya, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. And we also have Suleiman Mugula. He joins us also from Durban. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
Welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. And here in the studio, as I said, my colleague Blessing Zulu from VOA Zim Service. Blessings, welcome to the show once again. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be the violence in South Africa. At least South Africa has long been a haven for African immigrants, but now at least 5 people have been killed and hundreds forced to flee their homes in one of South Africa's worst outbreaks of xenophobic violence in years. First, let's listen to this report from our correspondent Kuto Sumalo in Johannesburg.
Somali national Ibrahim Mohamed Ali runs a coffee shop in Johannesburg. Memories of the 2008 xenophobic attacks in South Africa are still fresh in his mind. He lost his panel beating business and his brother as well.
That time, even my brother, you kill him, that xenophobic guys. My brother is passed away there. You kill him and that robbery for xenophobia. Me, I lost all my tools, all my money.
7 years later, the attacks have erupted again and have left foreigners terrified. Somali and Ethiopian nationals owning grocery shops in Soweto Township were the first to be targeted. They were beaten and chased away by locals who took over their businesses. Foreign shop owners in Durban were the next to be targeted, and now all African foreign nationals are being told to pack and leave. Thousands have been displaced and are living in makeshift camps. Ethiopian national Sarah Kitane is traumatized after being violently forced out of her shop in Soweto.
I'm not feeling okay. I was losing 2 months. I was losing my life. Then I don't know what can I say. But I don't have any choice now. I don't know. I don't have any choice now. I'll go back there. But the people is not gone. They will start again.
Other victims say South African police are turning a blind eye to their fate. Gitao Anio, 32, is one of them.
I did go to report for police. No one helped me that time. I was in police station. No police even that time. I don't know what happened. I didn't receive anything.
Many others, like 25-year-old John Alem, say they are puzzled by the attacks.
Yeah, we are African brothers, but they give us big problem. Yeah, they kill our brothers, and they rob our own shops.
South African authorities have denied the country is experiencing xenophobic attacks, preferring to call them criminal acts. Abdirikaz Ali Osman, National Secretary of the Somali Community Board of South Africa, disagrees.
To me, actually, it's pure xenophobic attacks which have been targeted by the foreign nationals who are living in the country, especially those who are having small informal businesses in the townships and informal settlements. So it's obvious that it's xenophobic and Afrophobic violence, actually.
Osman is pleading with authorities to swiftly intervene before these foreign nationals, who have already lost their livelihood, lose their lives as well. Although the attacks are intensifying each day, the foreign nationals, especially those from Somalia and Ethiopia, say they would rather die in South Africa than return to their countries of origin, where they are likely to be met with even more violence. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Tuso. Now that we just had that report from Johannesburg, let me begin with our guest, Tammy Ngwenya, in Durban. First of all, Mr. Ngwenya, give us an update of what the situation is like right now.
Thanks again, Minister Klaus. As you may be aware, today the provincial government organized a march for those South Africans who say no to xenophobia and who embraces based on the values of Ubuntu, as also prescribed in our own national constitution, which has been celebrated around the world as one of the best constitutions, I mean, around. Mm-hmm. So the march, I mean, people came in their thousands and they literally voted on their feet to say no to violence. We are one. These are our brothers and sisters. This is not who we are. This is not what we stand for. The situation on the streets of Durban is compared to yesterday and the previous days, I mean, it's quite stable. Police are doing their job. They are patrolling the streets. They are ensuring that there is peace and stability. The key mandate that everyone has to do is that first and foremost, we have to protect lives, and secondly, we have
to... I see. And in your opinion, as we had in that report, some person complained that the police were turning a blind eye. Is that not true?
I wouldn't say that is true, because I mean, as things stand at the moment, about 78 by the time we're having those marches, and then the time when our premier of the province, Senzo Mthunu, and the Minister of State Security briefed the media after the march at around about 2 this afternoon, it was clear that the police have done what they are expected to do. About 78 people had already been arrested. And also, what is very critical is that some of the information that led to those kind of arrests came from members of the community themselves, who are standing up and saying, this is not who we are, and we are against this. So they've been providing, I mean, the information that has led to the arrest of those perpetrators. So police, I mean, are doing what they have to do, and they've been able, I mean, to do that. And we are confident that they will continue to enforce the law as expected of them.
I see. Suleiman, you're also in Durban. You see the situation the same way, right?
Precisely, and in addition to what Mr. Ngwenya has said, in addition to what the provincial government has done, at national level, it has been a topic of discussion in Parliament. The President himself has expressed his outrage. The members of Parliament, the heads of the political parties, both the opposition and the ruling party, they have all expressed outrage. In addition to that, the way Mr. Ngwenya has said, in the march which was prepared in Durban today, it was joined by South Africans. Two buses came in from Johannesburg, which is about to plus minus 900 kilometers from Durban. Many South Africans managed to go on the buses to go and give support to the foreign nationals. In Durban, we are, the South Africans have come out in their numbers to give support to the foreigners. They are giving them food. They are giving them comfort. Religious leaders, the community leaders, as a whole, apart from the few who are involved, by and large, I can assure you, Douglas, and the African continent, that South Africans are the people. They don't have that much hate, which has been pronounced by many of the international media. Above all, we are where we are because of the South African hospitality and welcoming culture. If they had not been welcoming, if they had not hospitable. The foreigners or the immigrants from the African continent would not have been as many as they are, and we would not have been where we are. That is why, on top of that, the South Africa for so far for what they have done.
I see. Blessing, let me put you in the conversation here in the studio. Despite what Mr. Mugula and Mr. Ngwenya are saying, Hirafat International Media may be blowing the whole thing out of proportion, but we're seeing videos going viral of people being burnt, people being cut into pieces. There are reported deaths. How do you cycle the whole square, the whole circle?
I wouldn't blame the media for this. I think I'll put the blame squarely on the South African government. It was slow to react to this. I think they underestimated the outrage that this was going to generate. Look, for many Africans, they view the ANC as their own. You know, the African National Congress, because during the Liberation War, it was domiciled in many countries. I remember in 1967, the military wing of the ANC, Umkhonto weSizwe, was fighting alongside ZIPRA in Zimbabwe, then Rhodesia. Then you have the great Nelson Mandela. He was in Ethiopia in 1962. That's where he was trained. And what is said is that one of the first persons to die in this violence is actually from Ethiopia. So I would imagine, I think the great Nelson Mandela is not only turning in his grave, but he's spinning. And if you read his autobiography, he was actually saying that Ethiopia is the most important country close to his heart. And he was saying he enjoys visiting Ethiopia more than visiting America, Europe, or Britain combined, all those countries. So he said Ethiopia taught him a lot of things. You have the likes of Thabo Mbeki, who succeeded Mandela. He was also in at one time in Zimbabwe. Even his young brother was also in Zimbabwe during the Liberation War. So I think that is where most Africans are coming from. You know, South Africa, you can't compare it with our Zimbabwe, you know, with Uganda and all those excesses. South Africa is viewed differently.
Right.
So when this happens in South Africa, I think this is why many Africans are outraged.
I see. Mr. Ngwenya, in your opinion, what did the government, both in Pretoria and at regional levels like in KwaZulu-Natal, what didn't you get right to have prevented this carnage to have happened?
Yeah, well, I think that the first thing that, as the provincial government, we did was when the first reports came through that there have been attacks on foreign nationals, particularly in the Ispingo area, is that the premier of the province established an interministerial task team, which is led by the MEC for Safety and Security, safety and community liaison, the MEC for Health and the MEC for Social Development, first to ensure that places of safety are established for those that had been already been displaced, and then secondly, to ensure that they are provided with the necessary support. Provision of water, provision of food, and all of that. Then the second step that the Premier did was to then set up a panel of experts, which is led by Judge Navi Pillay, the former UN Commissioner on Human Rights. It also has figures like Vatu Kaunden, who is well known across the African continent in terms of conflict resolution, and other prominent South Africans, Paddy Khan, who is representing, the religious community. And then the third step that was then taken was to go and address a march that was that had been organized by religious community on Thursday, where the Premier denounced violence in the strongest possible way.
and characterize all the criminal activities that have been happening to say that they should not be continuing. And subsequent to that, the Minister of Home Affairs, the Minister of State Security, and the Minister of Police, together with the Premier, went to meet with the King, His Majesty, whom the initial statements had been attributed to address these particular issues, to see what is it that South African government is doing to address broadly the issue of the immigration. But what is fundamental is that the information that we sent out was clear. One is that South Africa does not stand for hatred that is directed to foreign nationals. Our very constitution, our very international treaties that we acceded to, the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights, which guarantees the right to life, the right for the free movement of people, and the protection of rights, places those obligations, I mean, on us. Our obligation is to promote, is to protect, and to fulfill human rights. That is a strong message that was sent, and that is what government has done well. But, of course, we also understand that there is serious discontent, and that is why this panel has been put up, to ensure that it has been given 12 months to look into these issues, get to the root cause of this, scientifically engage with the public. What are these issues that need to be dealt with, and advise government on the intervention. Yesterday, the Premier convened another meeting, which now is of South African traders, small business people, to say part of the issues that have been raised is that foreign nationals are taking over your businesses. What are your issues? Because if you say that they are taking over foreign businesses, but the shops that they are occupying were owned by South Africans, they've been leased to them. So this is therefore the debate and the whole dialogue that needs to happen.
I see.
Of course, you still have those isolated incidences, but they have to be dealt with. But government is firm on that. The first and foremost thing is to protect lives. Second is to end violence, and then is to ensure that we engage on serious dialogue.
I see. Well, gentlemen, Suleiman and Blessing, just hold your thoughts. Let's take a short break. Don't go away. We are going to continue our discussion of the violence sweeping South Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is xenophobic violence sweeping South Africa. Our panelists are Mr. Tami Ngwenya, Provincial Head of Communication, KwaZulu-Natal, my colleague Blessing Zulu, VOA's Zimbabwe Service, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Blessing, before I go to Suleiman, sort of, Ms. Ngwenya sort of alluded to what's the crux of the matter. What's the real problem? It's South Africans who feel they have no employment, and they have a feeling that maybe these African immigrants are taking over their jobs. But some of them are businesses. That's why I've not seen any Indians or whites being killed in this conflict. Couldn't it have been more prudent for the government to address that issue of unemployment?
Yeah, I think that's the big elephant in the room. I think that's one issue that the South Africans must address. And of course, you know, I mean, just talking to some South Africans, I think they too have genuine concerns. You know, we cannot just dismiss them. You know, what they are also saying is that, you know, look, there are some employers who are taking advantage of people who are coming in. South Africa is an estimated 5 million immigrants, right? So what some employers are doing is, you know, they underpay the South Africans because they can simply employ someone coming from Malawi, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, who is desperate. So this obviously causes tensions amongst some South Africans, you know, those in the high density areas and stuff like that. So because the economy, the cake is too small, you know, some people feel that, you know, it's the foreigners who are to blame, and there's also the issue of crime. I don't know how to what extent, without statistics, you can blame the foreigners. Mm-hmm. But there are also those concerns, you know, that there are some people who are not documented. You are familiar with that problem. Even here in America, there are 11.2 million people who are not documented.
Right.
And of course, during the election, like now, we are entering the silly season of politics. You see that coming up amongst our politicians. Mm-hmm. So that is also an issue that has to be addressed. You see, what has to be done to those people who are illegally in South Africa? I think it's a legitimate debate.
I see. Suleiman, this is more driven by economics than anything else, because from our reporting here, we haven't had so-called foreign doctors or engineers being attacked. It's these other petty traders, businessmen, and other employees.
You are precisely correct, Douglas. It is social and economic factors. Number one, to begin with, it is not unique to South Africa. Mm-hmm. The attacks like these ones have been on the continent since independence. It depends on which country is economically doing well. As you remember, in West Africa, at one time in the 70s, it was Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Then it, in the 80s, it went to Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Then it shifted to Gabon. Then in East Africa, it has been Kenya. Then in Southern Africa, sometimes Zimbabwe was good. Now it is to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So long as there is one country doing well, surrounded by poverty, then it is automatic that those pressures have to be there. So in South Africa at the moment, some of the concerns which are raised, the way my colleagues have said, some of these concerns are genuine concerns. Even in the manner in which His Royal Highness had put it, though it was misinterpreted, but he was raising concerns which are genuine and which are realistic. Number one, South Africa is sitting on unemployment of about 4 million people. On top of this one, we have got an influx of people, of immigrants from African countries. Zimbabwe alone is about 1 million plus. It has got now, in addition to this one, add on our friends from Ethiopia and Somalia. Douglas, you remember very well when we had, on this very program, we discussed the immigration of Africans, both to Europe and in other parts of the continent, especially South Africa. And we highlighted, I think in 2014, the high numbers of Ethiopians who are moving from Ethiopia towards South Africa, and the numbers were not small.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the moment, from the context of which the king said, if I can quote him indirectly, I remember the king said the number of foreigners in the towns right now in South Africa, you cannot even see the shops.
Mm-hmm.
So to begin with, let me put it the other way around. They have got categories. For the professionals, nobody is touched. The skilled people, nobody is touched. But then you have got the unemployed immigrants who are all over the place, who have inundated the place. That is the major concern. Those are the people who are going in the informal areas. Those are the people who are fighting for opportunities with the 4 million unemployed South Africans. So the issue is also revolving around the socio-economic issues, which need to be addressed. Otherwise, by and large, the professionals, the big entrepreneurs, they are not touched by this violence. To sum it up, let me put it this way. For example, our friends who are being, our brothers who are being harassed. Douglas, we have got our friends who are moving as petty traders within the communities, going in the villages, some taking wares on their heads, some selling cigarettes, some selling small petty shops. Those are the ones which have concerned some of the South Africans who feel that they can also do such businesses. That is where they are calling in the government to intervene. This is a very complex social and economic issue. And on top of that, we have also to consider the push factors. By and large, our African countries have not had a political transformation. Our economies have lagged behind. Now South Africa is carrying the burden of all the poor leadership on the continent.
I see. Mr. Ngwenya, we're running out of time, but briefly, Has this got to do with lackstain in South Africa's immigration implementation or laws, or what do you think? Because this has to be addressed. You can't have open borders, or you don't have open borders.
Well, Douglas, I mean, I think Mohammed has nailed it in a range of areas. The issue of whether we can relax our borders or not, remember, people who are refugees and are running against persecution in their own countries, as a signatory to the United Nations, we also are obliged to give shelter, I mean, to those particular like people. But I think a point has to be made that irrespective of the position that the people find themselves in, whether they are documented or undocumented, the first thing that needs to be ensured is that no one has a right to take another person's life. If there is any act of criminality that is being suspected, there are no enforcement agencies to deal with that. South Africa is a country that respects and observes the rule of law. So whoever is within our borders will protect that kind of a person. But of course, we have to deal with the criminal elements uh-huh. that are also found, I mean, in that particular like context. But we have to provide the protection of life. We have to ensure that we deal with those issues of documentation and ensure that those criminal elements are isolated. And those that are in a country illegally and they cannot prove in any way whatsoever, then they will have to be taken back home. And that happens on a continuous basis. We have a center, Lindela, where they are taken, where they are verified, and where they are taken back to their places. We have to observe the rule of law.
I see. A blessing, we're out of time. But briefly, how do you see this on ending?
It's very difficult.
Or it happens, a flash of this, and then it goes away.
Yeah, I mean, that, it's a problem that has to be dealt with, because in 2008, there were similar acts, and 62 people died in the process. But I think it's good for Africans to realize that, you know, most of the borders were caused by the colonialists. We are one.
We are one people, after all. So, and it's difficult to stop them. I mean, there's
it
no way to stop
it
them.
It is very difficult. As long as there are problems in Zimbabwe, unemployment over 90%, people will find a way of going to South Africa. You know, whether the borders are tight or what, they will find a way of going there. So, I think even in the region, you know, if things are not stable, these are the are the results. You know, this is what happens. It's a big problem.
I think I even got an email, somebody suggesting that what the President Zuma should do is talk to his fellow leaders in the region.
Indeed. I don't know what happened to the African peer review that President Mbeki was trying to promote.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, Douglas, something 10 seconds. Happened.
10 seconds.
Maybe to force President Zuma and the South African government to pressurize these rusty leaders on the continent to wake up because they are becoming a burden to South Africa.
I see. Well,
in order for South Africa to progress, they have to put their houses in order. We cannot have leaders staying in power for 20, 30 years. They are rusted.
I see.
They don't give hope to the people. People are running away because there is no hope.
That's
there
right.
is no opportunity.
Well, gentlemen, points taken, and we'll revisit this issue, and we hope the violence goes away very soon. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Tami Ngwenyi, Provincial Head of Communication, KwaZulu-Natal, my colleague Blessing Zulu, VOA Zimbabwe Service, and Suleiman Mbula, independent political analyst in South Africa. Gentlemen, once again, thanks very much for being on the show.
The pleasure is
mine.
Thank you. Our producer tonight was Kwame Ofori, and our engineer was Anhong Chan. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you miss any part of this program, you can go to our website at www.voanews.com, click on programs, scroll down Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to it again. Once again, thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Sipuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.